was a park. The eagle's a castle, and I am the sentry, granting the spineless the easiest entry. Impossible subjects are eager to bow, so fire up the spit, wheel in the cow. I'm in my element now. Toasting my virtue, the goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end. Feeding my ego again. For their praises, they're nursing me now with their sweet empty phrases. The critics are cleaving my peace with a mallet. No spoils are received by the king's fragile palate. Stuffing myself on the blind adulation, dreadful of self, its intense mastication. The simpleton's choir has taken its place, accolades spewing from each vacant face. Now let's say grace. Toasting my virtue, the goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end. Feeding my ego again. The goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end. Feeding my ego, toasting my virtue. The goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end.
Yes, kiddies, it's time for Mideast Madness, coming to you every Monday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon local time. That's 1500 hours Pacific Standard Time. I believe this is the weekend upcoming that we're going to switch back to Daylight Savings Time. But Mideast Madness will still appear into your ears 3 p.m. every Monday. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to remind everyone that we run to a large degree on donations, combinations of donations from listeners and good-hearted people who want to see this service, and particularly this show, I like to think, continue and be available. Of that and of the fees that every programmer, including this one, has to pay for the privilege of doing the show. I shell out a fair bit of money every month to the collective, the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, and we're very careful about how we spend it. At any rate, consider sending in your donations to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, that's two words, Santa and C-R-U-Z, California 95061. Again, FRSC as in Free Radio Santa Cruz, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California 95061. Shortly, I'll be giving you the phone numbers that go directly to the studio here and to me. You will be on the air if you call in. I'll give you a chance to make sure you have a writing implement and something to write that implement on. Okay, my name is Ren, and I want to clear up something right away. How do I start talking about this? I think that I may, in the course of doing these programs, have been simply too over the top in my trying to encourage people to call in so we can have discussions and make the show the interesting show that it really should be, based out there in the public. And I'm just making sure we have a recorder going. A recorder is going. Very good. Too over the top in the sense that I may have been too aggressive. I've said things like, go ahead, call me if you have the guts. Stuff to that effect. Or I may have said, you want to argue with me? You want to call me an anti-Semite? You want to take issue with anything that I have to say? And I've been expecting that kind of talk to garner people to call in to encourage live participation with the listeners. I don't want to scare anyone. I'm not here to make enemies. Indeed, I am in the pursuit of peace and justice, perhaps reconciliation, in doing this show for you, Mideast Madness. I talk almost exclusively about the conflict between Israelis and Arabs, in particular Palestinian Arabs. And I don't want to scare anyone. I would really appreciate getting some feedback for at least two reasons. One, as I said, to make the show more of a real show, one that touches base and sounds like it touches base with each of you out there. I mean, I know there are just tens of thousands of listeners who are hearing me right now. That's the important thing. But it's awfully lonely here. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know, y'all know that I get lonely really easily. So I'm going to mellow out that procedure by simply repeating the encouragement for people to call in to the show. And I'm willing to discuss. I encourage discussion. I seek dialogue between all parties involved in this and all those who care about this topic, Israelis and Arabs, etc. So I openly invite you to call in. With that in mind, okay, and here are the phone numbers. Here in Santa Cruz County, California, on the west coast of North America, area code 831-427-3772. Again, area 831-427-3772. We have a second line coming into the studio, if it's more appealing to you. Same area code, 831-469-3119. That's line 2, 469-3119. Now, here it is, 12 whole minutes past the hour. Let's get to the meat of it. You know, to be perfectly honest, I haven't even read this one yet, the one that I'm going to read to you, but it looks interesting. Most of you know that the film Argo, A-R-G-O, won the Motion Picture Academy of Arts and Sciences top award for best film, the Oscar for best film of, I guess that'd be 2012. The Chronicle. No, not the one in San Francisco. This would be... Shoot. I did come across which Chronicle they were talking about. Okay. This Duke University. The Duke Chronicle. And it's dated February 26th by Abdullah Antepli. This is entitled, Argo is Bad, Embarrassing, and Wrong. Apparently the nickname of this author, Abdul Antepli's nickname is Blue Devil Imam. Imam Antepli is the Muslim chaplain at Duke University. He writes a regular column for the Duke Chronicle, and here it is, entitled Argo is Bad, Embarrassing, and Wrong. I wonder if I am the only one deeply disturbed and troubled by the recent Hollywood movie Argo. My increasing sense of loneliness and alienation with Argo has been fed by the movie's overrated fame, its undeserved success at the movie theaters, and now more painfully by the multiple Oscars that it has won. To me, Argo and the response it has created shed light on larger problems that we face in our society, especially in our movie industry. Argo demonstrates how out of touch we are with crucial global realities and how disconnected we are from how we come across to the rest of the human family through these kinds of expressions. I welcome the news of Argo, the title of the film, A-R-G-O. I welcomed the news of Argo when I first heard of it, hoping that it would help us face one of the ugliest chapters of our recent U.S. history with Iran. I was misled by the initial publicity of the movie and excited to see how the movie would unveil our government's miserably failed foreign policies prior to the Islamic Revolution in 1979. I was eagerly waiting to see how the movie would enable an honest, self-critical assessment of Uncle Sam's, especially the CIA's, shameful involvement in the toppling of the democratically elected government in Iran in the early 1950s. And the empowering of a reprehensibly corrupt and oppressive regime in the country for over four decades. More importantly, I hope the movie would show how, in part, these ethical and moral failures helped the conception and the birth of the so-called 1979 Islamic Revolution that ruined Iranian society. Once again, folks, I'm reading from an article out of Duke University's Duke Chronicle entitled Argo is Bad, Embarrassing, and Wrong by the Blue Devil Imam Abdullah Antepli, Muslim chaplain at Duke. So this is Imam Antepli's words. Continuing with article. After giving a puzzlingly brief lip service to my expectations at the beginning of the movie, Argo moved on to be another embarrassing Rambo 3 movie in many despicable ways. An innocent white Western David beating up ugly, exotic, monstrous Oriental Goliaths and emerging as victor despite all odds. It caters to its home audience's starvation for self-glory and self-serving happy endings. More troublingly, the movie does all of that by distorting the obvious facts about one of the most important events in our recent history and dehumanizing a rich civilization irresponsibly. Film critic Kevin B. Lee expressed my heartache best when he recently reviewed Argo for Slate, saying, and I quote, "Looking at the runaway success of this film, it seems as if critics and audiences alike lack the historical knowledge to recognize a self-serving perversion of an unflattering past or the cultural acumen to see the utterly ersatz nature of the enterprise. A cast of stock characters and situations and a series of increasingly contrived narrow escapes from third world mobs who, predictably, are never quite smart enough to catch up with the Americans." End quote. Quotation from film critic Kevin B. Lee. Argo also disturbingly caters to the biased post-9/11 image of Islam, Muslims, and Middle Easterners who effectively serves to reassert existing stereotypes. The movie skillfully markets, once again, the newly found international enemy of Western civilization. The movie describes and pictures the monolithic, black and white, pejorative, primitive, archaic, vengeful, unforgiving, unredeemably ignorant and dangerous and forever dangerous nature of this new and scary enemy. Since the release of the movie, many of my friends from all over the world, both Middle Eastern and otherwise, expressed their dismay and distaste about Argo. Much of what they said can be summarized in the following questions. Who the heck do these people think they are? Who will buy the self-serving, biased, and inaccurate propaganda in 2013? Do the filmmakers not realize they make fools of themselves? For God's sake, give us a break. I also wonder how many Americans watched Argo and asked these kinds of questions. My friend's rightful frustrations over Argo mirror certain realities of us as a society. It is no longer the 1980s, the Reagan days, where movies like Rambo can fly. This kind of self-glorifying distortion of history can no longer go unnoticed or unpunished. What will it take to wake up from our self-delusions and express ourselves as we are, not what we wish to be? Again, Slate's Kevin B. Lee puts it perfectly, quote, "We can delight all we like in this cinematic recycling art. But the fact remains that we are no longer living in a world where we can get away with films like this. Not if we want to be in a position to deal with the world that is rising to meet us. The movies we endorse need to rise to the occasion of reflecting a new global reality using a newer set of storytelling tools than this reheated excuse for a historical, geopolitical thriller." End quote. I can't agree with him more, and I fully share his disappointment and deep sense of embarrassment over Argo. U.S. society in general, and our movie industry in particular, have so much to catch up on with modern-day realities and global responsibilities. Let's stop making fools of ourselves. That is the article from Imam Abdullah Antpli, who calls himself the Blue Devil Imam. That's, well, it says Blue Devil Imam right under the title here. From Duke University Chronicle, and article is entitled, "Argo is Bad, Embarrassing, and Wrong." And Mr. Antpli, Imam Antpli, is the Muslim chaplain and an adjunct faculty of Islamic studies. His column runs every other Tuesday. You can follow Abdullah on Twitter at Aantiple. That's A, another A, N-T-E-P-L-I. Well, it's obvious to me that the imam here is speaking primarily as a Muslim, and he seems to be, as I read this, he seems to be addressing in particular other Muslims or people who are enlightened people who are open to the Muslim perspective. And he, like when he talks about we are this and we must do that, he could be speaking of Americans or any other readers of this article in general. But the way I read it, he is talking to his fellow Muslims, and that's perfectly fine. Regarding the movie itself and me, I also had, before I actually saw the film, I was very curious to see the treatment of the 79 Revolution's capturing of the United States Embassy in Tehran, the capital of that country. I heard it was a zinger. I expected it to be a thriller, right on the edge of my seat kind of thing. And in the case of the latter, the thriller aspect, I wasn't disappointed at all. And that probably had a great deal to do. I'm sure that had a great deal to do with the success of the film and even the winning of the Oscar for Best Picture. I recognize the things that the imam is talking about in his article. I did find myself concerned about it, and I found myself both frightened by some of the characters, particularly the Iranian characters who did not speak English in the film, both frightened by them, which I think is part of the effect the filmmakers wanted, and also embarrassed and kind of cringing. Now, I am not even Muslim. My father is a Palestinian, born and raised in Jerusalem, Israel/Palestine, and he lost all his possessions and wealth. He was fortunate enough to be out of the country, out of that country, Israel, etc. When it was founded in May of 1948, and because of being out of the country, he could not get back in because Palestinians had been chased out and were not permitted to return. I can't think of a single instance of one Palestinian who was ever able to return to their homes, to their properties, houses, farms, whatever, after the so-called War of Independence of the new Israeli state. Point is, my father was in effect a displaced person, unable to go back. He met his lovely American wife in San Francisco, and they raised their family of four children. But my father was also a Christian, in particular, a Lutheran. All the denominations have a presence in the holy city of Jerusalem, regardless of what a person of one faith or another may say about the degree of legitimacy that their religion has on the hold of this city. But indeed, my father was raised a Lutheran, and I was raised in a Lutheran church here in America. And yet, even as a Christian, I still found myself cringing and kind of almost wanting to look away at a number of the scenes in Argo. That's my emotional response, tainted perhaps by the intellectual background that I have of recognizing this kind of demonization of the Muslims and of Middle Easterners, foreigners in general. So I do identify, I for one identify very much with the imam's article here. I do wish, however, he would go into more. He's almost rambling here, saying roughly the same thing over and over again in the article, I think. I personally wished he would have given more concrete examples of what he was talking about instead of just talking around the film. Let me give you the phone numbers again. Area code 831-427-3772. Or the second line, 469-3119. I'm all by myself here. You'll go directly onto the air if you call. Please, if you'd like to discuss this, give your take on the article or your take on my views, feel more than welcome. I'd love to hear from you. Okay. It is almost 3:30 here, 3:28 to be exact, in Santa Cruz County, California. Waiting for my somewhat slow computer to return. What else do I want to talk about? Here's a rather alarming dispatch that I received from a good friend who happens to be a retired, or I think semi-retired, minister in the Methodist Church. He writes to me how the Israeli press writes it and how the Israeli public understands it. It's those pesky Palestinian provocateurs and terrorists. Specifically, this piece is from Israel Hayom, HAYOM.com. It's a newsletter. IDF is prepping for escalation in the West Bank. Controlled chaos. Top IDF's Central Command generals are making preparations for another escalation in Judea and Samaria. And we're waiting for the article to pop up here. Come on, baby. Oh, I need to go to Facebook in order to read this one. Folks, please don't forget to consider sending at least a small donation, or as much as you can muster up, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, where we often find ourselves hanging by our fingernails on the next month or two of anticipated operations. Send your donations to FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California 95061. This is Rent a Wheel on Mideast Madness. Okay, from the newsletter Israel Hayom, Tuesday, March 5. I first saw this last night, which was already Tuesday after midnight in Israel and Palestine. Again, it's called Controlled Chaos. Top IDF. IDF stands for Israeli Defense Forces. Top IDF Central Command generals are making preparations for another escalation in Judea and Samaria, which may develop either during or after U.S. President Barack Obama's visit to the region. I am looking. I want to see who exactly. I guess, the author of this is one Efrat Forsher. The defense establishment could justly derive some satisfaction from 2012, a year during which no Israelis were killed in terrorist attacks in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. By comparison, 11 Israelis were killed in attacks the year before. Thus, 2012 was the safest, most stable year in a generation. Certainly the quietest year since the outbreak of the Second Intifada in October 2000. That was the beginning of the Second Intifada now. Then came Operation Pillar of Defense in November 2012, the month the rules of the game changed once again. During the fighting, there was a significant increase in the number of violent incidents reported in Judea and Samaria. These occurrences led to violent demonstrations, clashes with the security forces, and a spike in the number of stone-throwing attacks along roads in the territories. We also witnessed the return of terrorist activity, including the use of explosive devices and the hurling of firebombs. Personal comment here, I want to remind everyone that this author is referring to clashes occurring outside of Israel, beyond the so-called Green Line, which is the boundary which was established by the beginning of 1949 between the new state of Israel and territory between Israel and the Jordan River, which came under occupation by Jordan, and the Gaza Strip, which came under the authority of the Egyptian government. So when I read to you these details about firebombs, the return of terrorist activity, stone-throwing attacks, I'm talking about activity that's taking place in land which is illegally, militarily occupied by Israel, taken way back in 1967. There is no ethical reason for the military to hang on to it. They're just defending Israeli settlers who also are illegally impinging upon the Palestinians. Now, we're getting a call. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, what's your name?
This is Robert. I've called you earlier, or before, on other programs.
Yeah, you are in San Diego, is that right?
Yeah, I don't have to get on the air. I just wanted to tell you I'm recording the program, but I'm listening.
Well, that's great. What do you intend on doing with the recording?
I have to listen to it when I get back. I have to leave and go out and do some things right now.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I am on the air.
How have you been otherwise, Robert?
Okay. Trying to keep up.
Excuse me?
Trying to keep up, you know, with what we used to call the rat race.
A lot of
demands on our time and energy.
Well, you already know that I'm do have this one radio show. Other than that, I am basically retired. What kind of work do you do?
I'm retired too.
You are retired too. Yeah, we must keep busy, mustn't we?
There doesn't seem to be any alternative or escape for that.
So you're recording the show for later perusing.
Yeah.
But you're able to call in right now, or you must be in a hurry or between tasks or something.
Well, I was just on my way out to go to the post office and stuff, you know.
Okie doke. Well, I'm really happy that you keep up with us.
Yeah, man.
I do. Have you ever had an opportunity to speak with any of your friends and your colleagues about this show?
Well, it's interesting that you say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I was going to speak to you about anything, it would be that my approach to this whole problem is in trying to find the method, the way, the methodology for waking people up who simply are in denial and are apathetic and are basically what we call mind controlled. You know, they're subdued by the constant pounding of the media, mainstream, this kind of artificial cultural paradigm that's been cast upon us.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and along those lines, I I'll respond to you by saying just last night I was watching portions of a film that came out a few years ago. Obviously, the film came out sometime in the early or mid-2000s. It's entitled Peace Propaganda and... Peace Propaganda in the Middle East or something like that. Put out by a Middle East study group. And this was shown here in Santa Cruz at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. It has some really excellent eye-opening and disturbing things to say about how the Western media, the United States media, is has, as the film described it, a series of filters like hoops that facts go through in order to come out and to come out on the air and in print. I can't remember exactly the order, but there is the filter which is involving the U.S. government and for these legislators to continue to get
funding
from those who support Israel and from American Jews and American Jewish organizations. They they put their two cents in terms of what to withhold and what to allow to get to the media. And then the media itself has its filters. They have their own problems to deal with in dealing with their Zionist backers. And then there are filters, you know, government filters, media filters, public filters that are sort of brought to bear by the private groups around the world. And it was a fascinating film. We saw only some of the middle chapters, but it talked about how the message we're getting through the American media, and they even had a couple of clips of Dan Rather and Peter Jennings, the late Peter Jennings, who are otherwise considered, who are revered in the United States by many, demonized by some, but they're talking about how, in effect, Israel is under attack by Palestinians in the occupied territories, which of course is absurd because they're talking about people who were under a military occupation. But what happens inevitably in the U.S. media is that this is presented to the public as defense of the Israelis trying to forestall and to prevent the destruction of Israel by the Arabs, and of course what they're really talking about is people who are acting out of frustration and fear and hatred that has been generated while they live under occupation, and they're not even inside Israel proper. But yeah, you're right. That's what you were saying about people who are in denial. There are certainly plenty of those. I have come across so many comments of the common Israel supporter who are just, they're unreal in their arguments.
I know.
Yeah.
It's bloody pathological.
As you put it a couple of calls ago, Robert, there's a huge Orwellian factor here. What's down is up is, and up is down.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I think it's become... institutionalized. It's now a standard technique that's being used by the oppressive elements within governments and institutions.
It has been for a long time. It's not a new thing.
What I'm doing now is I'm looking up the best, I think, of the websites that keeps track of environmental disasters. Because there was a story, here we go, there was a story here the other day about what's being done to pacify and silence the people in highly contaminated areas around Fukushima, Japan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
because, of course, a lot of people want to evacuate, or they want to evacuate their children.
Yes.
And the government, apparently, the government is under the thumb of KEPCO, which is really, I think, allied with Goldman Sachs. I think that's where most of the money is coming from to impose nuclear power on Japan, mm-hmm. plus the Pentagon and the whole nuclear industry thing. Let me see if I can find this thing.
I think part of what's going on is the powers that be, that the Goldman Sachs, et cetera, whom you're talking about, they're in a kind of chronic panic mode, because the people at the top know damn well about the degree of contamination and about the cancers that are coming and already starting amongst not only the Japanese people, but very possibly here on the West Coast, in terms of flotsam that we get across the ocean and just cross contamination. And I'm not speaking entirely out of expertise. I'm not speaking out of expertise on the subject, but they're in a panic mode because they know they can't reverse this, and everything is damage control in terms of the media, in terms of the PR, and they have to. Yeah. That's what's going on.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble finding that thing.
I'll tell you
what I think the media is doing right now is when they do have to report something, they're talking about the debris from the tsunami and the earthquake that's coming on the ocean currents on the surface that's going to show up on the beaches here.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, my God, you know, this. Everybody's worried. They never talk about the radiation. They talk about people's concerns about the radiation, right?
Yeah.
That's one trick. The other trick is that they're going to talk about how people are afraid of this debris because it might be radioactive. And then they're going to go out there with some expert in a suit or something, and they're going to look at it and poke a Geiger counter at it and say, well, it's only, you know, 0.0-something sieverts above background, you know, so it's not dangerous. But the whole thing is a dodge, because that debris washed into the ocean when the accident began, you know, on the day of the earthquake and the tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And the radiation is a completely different thing. It's following different routes, and it's coming at a different rate. And it's not going to just come and wash up on the beaches and stop. It's going to keep coming for a long, long time to come. They don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff being swept under the rug. And this is exactly the kind of thing that people, that some people are not merely apathetic about, but they are... What's the word used? In denial about. They're in denial. Yeah, even in Santa Cruz, we had just a couple of days after, about 2 days following the tsunami in northeastern Japan, we got our own mini tsunami here in Santa Cruz, and the harbor was flooded, and couple of million dollars worth of damage, or at least several hundred thousand dollars worth of damage occurred. We got it. We got a secondary or tertiary tsunami of our own, which trashed the harbor here.
Yeah, it's a pretty big wave.
Yeah.
Okay, I found that thing. Now this is a brief summary, so it's not a full article.
Well, listen, go ahead and read us a paragraph or two that you feel is pertinent, but overall I'd like to keep this on the Middle East, so go ahead. A short
one. Well, that's what I'm talking about. This is relevant to that.
Okay.
I didn't mean to get off on the radiation thing so much.
Okay.
This is, I'm talking about the methodology that's being perfected to control populations, and make them oblivious to reality, really, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is only a couple of paragraphs, very short. Titled, Japanese Bloggers Troubling Insight into the Psyche of Post-Disaster Fukushima Residents, okay? It says, in just 10 days' time, 2 years will have passed since the magnitude 9.03 earthquake. According to one former Fukushima resident, however, there is something very much amiss in the prefecture. In an article published by influential social commentary website Blogger, Satoshi Nakajima, a computer engineer whose credentials include having worked for Japan's own NTC Communications and being the chief architect on Microsoft's Windows 95 and 98 operating systems, recently discussed the state of things in Fukushima Prefecture 2 years after the disaster. In his article, Nakajima likens the situation to that of an almost totalitarian state, wherein one either adheres to the commonly held belief set or is seen as a potential threat.
Okay.
I'm going to say that again in case anybody missed it.
Go ahead.
He likens the situation that of an almost totalitarian state, wherein one either adheres to the commonly held belief set or is seen as a potential threat. Okay?
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happening here if anybody suggests that that Palestinians are barbarous apes that are launching rockets at Israel every day and are just filled with hate and are a dangerous threat, you know? If you challenge that paradigm, that belief, you are seen as a threat. You're seen by the government as a threat, you know, like a terrorist threat, but you're seen as your friends and neighbors. They perceive you as a threat to the status quo, to the comfortable state of denial that they're in, where they believe the stuff that's coming out over the airwaves.
And this network of kind of institutionalized censorship is as far as Israel is concerned, there's a huge factor of that bugaboo anti-Semitism, which is used to the hilt by the Israelis and by various Jewish concerns, Zionist concerns in the United States. You know, if someone has something, even the most logical, responsible, even compassionate criticism of the way the government of Israel is doing something and how their military establishment is doing something, they run the risk of being tagged as merely as anti-Semites. And so that pretty much keeps members of Congress in check, members of various local governments in check, who don't want to be perceived as anti-Semites. They've seen what happens to major personalities whose careers are often effectively ruined or severely damaged if the accusation of anti-Semitism is leveled at them. And they're not necessarily anti-Jewish.
No.
They don't necessarily hate Jews.
No, it's the whole thing is just a fake, man. It's like, you know, I'm anti-Zionist as hell, you know. And they use the logical device, the rhetorical device, that is, of equivocation to say, well, if you're anti-Zionist, you must be anti-Jewish. And since we say that Jews are a race, that makes you a racist. You know?
Yes.
And
it's just
bizarre, man. it's so bad. It's so phony. It's so con artist.
The former mayor of New York, now the late Ed Koch, passed away a week or so ago. He was ex-mayor, of course. It's been quite a while since he was in office, but he passed away, an American Jew who on some counts was very liberal and pro, you know, pro-individual, pro-worker. However, he was quoted as saying, and is renowned by some, revered by some people for saying, quote unquote, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, and that is one of the most devious, non-helpful philosophies that you can have. It's the mastery of circular thinking, which shuts down any criticism of Israel. No matter how much credence you give that criticism, or are likely to, if you say they're saying in effect that in order for a Jewish person to be a good Jewish person, you have to be pro-Israel. That's the philosophy of the most ardent Israelis, and then you get expressions like self-hating Jews, like the members of Jewish Voice for Peace. And what's the other one? They're not Jewish enough if they don't support Israel. You know, that's their philosophy. But the problem with that philosophy, the flaw in that philosophy, is they're applying it to everyone, whether they're Zionist or not, whether they're Jew or Gentile. Perhaps in these days I should see whether they're Jewish or they're not Jewish. And just leveling a blanket of criticism on the criticizers of Israel as being Jew haters. It's crazy. It's irresponsible. Robert, listen, I got a lot of stuff that I need to plow through here. As always, I'm very happy to hear from you, and it's good to know that you're still thinking of us and listening to the show. So do you want to close with anything?
Nope. Just say right on, brother, and I'll talk to you later.
You bet. Hope I hear from you again. Thank you, Robert.
You betcha.
Bye. And getting her off again so we can take more calls. Call us here, area code 831-427-3772. The alternative line to the studio here live with me is 831-469-3119. Please call in. Let the sparks fly if they're going to, or let the conversation go where it may. Okay. Now it's all 1554 hours here on the west coast of North America, 3:54 p.m. This is Mideast Madness with Ren Tawil. And it's coming across to you by way of Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live on the net at freakradio.org. If you do, go to our webpage. Practically the only way that there is to catch the streaming signal is you scroll down that main page. There's a cartoonish image of a radio tower, and at the top of that tower is a big red oval, filled in red oval. Click on that oval to get our stream. Of course, make sure your speakers are on. You may also need a program like Real Player or whatever to make that link happen for you. And we broadcast on the FM band at 101.3, Santa Cruz, California. I'm going to return to the article now. We didn't get too far, so I'll just read it from the beginning. This is entitled Controlled Chaos, dated today, March 5th, from Israel Hayom. Subtitled, This is Where We Stand. You judge for yourself. Controlled Chaos, from the top. Top IDF Central Command generals are making preparations for another escalation in Judea and Samaria, which is Israel's name for the West Bank, which may develop either during or after U.S. President Barack Obama's visit to the region. The defense establishment could justly derive some satisfaction from 2012, a year during which no Israelis were killed in terrorist attacks in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. By comparison, 11 Israelis were killed in attacks the year before. Thus, 2012 was the safest, most stable year in a generation. Certainly the quietest year since the outbreak of the Second Intifada, October 2000. Then came Operation Pillar of Defense in November 2012. The month the rules of the game changed once again. During the fighting, there was a significant increase in the number of violent incidents reported in Judea and Samaria. This was just 3 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, folks, last November. These occurrences led to violent demonstrations, clashes with the security forces in the occupied territories, I will add, and a spike in the number of stone-throwing attacks along roads in the territories. We also witnessed the return of terrorist activity, including the use of explosive devices and the hurling of firebombs. This is pretty much where we left off before Robert's call. Continuing with article, according to a report commissioned by the Israel Security Service, Shin Bet, there were 166 recorded terrorist incidents in the area encompassing Jerusalem. That's just the area encompassing Jerusalem. Judea and Samaria. This past November, in the month prior, there were just 70 incidents. September saw just 67 such attacks, according to the report in December. There were 111 reported attacks in Jerusalem and the territories, while, quote, only, end quote, 83 attacks were recorded in January. Despite these figures, however, 2013 began with an acute increase in the number of incidents regarded as popular terrorist incidents, particularly in comparison to the same period last year, which is to say 41 attacks in January 2012. Article goes on. The term popular terrorism has replaced the concept popular hostile subversive actions, which was the phrase used by top military brass until 3 years ago. Please forgive me, folks. There's something weird is going on outside the studio. They're non-radio-related concerns in the building that we're at, and some noise is being made. It's quite frightening, actually. Perhaps you're hearing it, scraping sounds of wood against wood. Good God, I think someone's dragging something over the wooden patio on the floor above us. Okay, we'll just plow, carry on here, sally forth. The term popular terrorism has replaced the concept popular hostile subversive actions, which was the phrase used by top military brass until 3 years ago. The difference between these two concepts could be found in the manner with which they are dealt. Quote, popular hostile and subversive actions, end quote, were understood to be events over which there was no control, nor could authorities know when and where they would rear their ugly heads. Now there is a wall-to-wall understanding that popular terrorism is something that can be stopped. How do the authorities go about putting an end to popular terrorism? And the article just disappeared. The screen went utterly white blank here. Now it came back. Okay. Came back to the beginning of the article. Gotta figure out where I was. How do the authorities go about putting an end to popular terrorism? They do so by utilizing various means of sabotage. Similar to popular and hostile subversive actions, popular terrorism... Pardon me. Popular terrorism is carried out by individual assailants, namely Palestinians who are not sent by any organization. While this complicates efforts to snuff out these incidents, there are ways to stop them. There is intelligence gathering ambushes, which, of course, would be Israeli ambushes of Palestinian Arabs, the dispatching of special undercover units, and other means that are available to security forces. Okay. I'm realizing now that this Israel Hayom site here is a Zionist site. They are reporting about and apparently aiming to justify the preparations that top brass in the IDF are making for more escalation in the West Bank. Sounds like another massive and deadly sweep is on the way here. So, they are Zionists, and they seem to be going into some depth about the justification for this expected escalation soon. Under the subheading, Uprising in the Shadow of Consensus. The escalation in unrest and the rising tensions reached their peak last week after the death of Arafat Jaradat and amid the hunger strike staged by four jailed Palestinians in protest. Despite an official autopsy, which determined that Jaradat's death was not caused by his interrogation, but was rather the result of a pre-existing medical condition, the Palestinians, whose representatives were present during the autopsy and who apparently were quite selective in seeing what they saw, proceeded to blame Israel for his death. There is a clear consensus in Palestinian public opinion when it comes to the issue of Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails. The widely held view is that these prisoners, including the most hardened terrorists among them, should be incarcerated in Palestinian custody, not in Israel. In fact, there are three core issues that lie at the heart of Palestinian political and national discourse, which are potent enough to bring the masses into the streets. The first is the economic matter. And this is a very long article, and even though I'm sure it contains a lot of facts, it's going in a direction that I do not care to go, or the way it's going is too slanted for my taste. Therefore, we shall abandon this particular article. It's not censorship, folks. It's just that I have so much material to get to, I simply choose not to concentrate on this Facebook entry. Okay, so we got to go back to, let's see. Oh, come on. Stupid. Here, get rid of that. What is this anyway? Microsoft. I don't even know what that is. Internet Explorer. We don't need that. Okay, back to my drafts folder. And by the way, it is 4 minutes after 4 p.m. here in Santa Cruz County, California. The show is scheduled to go until 5 minutes before five. So we're well, we're about halfway through it now, over halfway through it. We have discussed one writer's opinion about the movie Argo, very negative. And we spoke with Robert this afternoon here, and we're talking about the IDF prepping for escalation. And we're moving on. Okay. Daryl comes through yet again. My friend, my retired preacher man friend, has come through with a piece that can be found at MiddleEastMonitor.com. How pertinent. It begins, while Israeli sources claimed that Jaradat died of a heart attack, Palestinian officials insist that, and let's just go to that article. MiddleEastMonitor.com. Things take a little longer now to transpire on Mideast Madness, this radio show, because I have for the time being anyway, given up the paper printouts of these items that I come across. And I'm reading them directly on the computer. Okay, I don't see. Let's see. Okay. The discussion of Mr. Arafat Jaradat is part of this article. Again, memo or Middle East Monitor, Creating New Perspectives, is the site. And the title of this one, dated 25 February, is The Palestinian Authority to Sue Israel Over Crimes Against Palestinians. Let me preface this now. Ever since late last year's admission to the United Nations General Assembly of the state of Palestine as a non-member observer state, amongst other things. Even as a non-member, the Palestine now has the right through the UN, which is constantly demonized by Israel and many Zionists in the United States. The UN, that is demonized. This action will give the Palestinian Authority, the governmental organization which more or less governs the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, to some degree, which now calls itself the State of Palestine, since the UN thing. PA is now the State of Palestine. We've been waiting now, anticipating, some of us, many of us, to see if the Palestinians go forth with the mechanism that they now have to put Israel before the International Criminal Court or other jurisdictional authorities to cite Israel for crimes against humanity. Okay, again, the title of this article is the PA, Palestinian Authority, or State of Palestine, to sue Israel over crimes against Palestinians, February 25. A Palestinian newspaper has reported that the Palestinian Authority decided on Monday to take the Israeli occupation to the International Criminal Court, ICC, for crimes against Palestinians in general, and against deceased Palestinian prisoner Arafat Jaradat in particular. Quote, the Palestinian leadership has definitely decided to go to the ICC and other human rights organizations in order to hold the Israeli occupation accountable for its crimes against Palestinians, especially Palestinian prisoners. The Palestinian minister of, end quote, the Palestinian Minister of Prisoners Affairs in Ramallah, Isa Karag, told the Gaza-based Al Rasala newspaper. Karag said that the time had not been specified as yet, but that the necessary arrangements were being put in place to start an international anti-occupation campaign. The need for this was reiterated after Jaradat's death, he said. Prisoners in Israeli jails live in a very bad situation, which requires an international movement supported by the Arabs, he also said. Abdul Karim Shober, a Palestinian expert in international law from Gaza, on Sunday called for Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to take such steps. He also called for him to sign the Rome Treaty in order to be able to sue the Israeli occupation over its crimes. Talking about the Rome Treaty there. Shobar said, if he does not go, one of the Arab states should adopt the prisoner's issue and sue the Israeli occupation instead. He said this during a rally held on Sunday in Gaza protesting against Jaradat's murder. And the article specifically uses the term murder. While Israeli sources claim that Jaradat died of a heart attack, Palestinian officials insist that he was tortured to death, as no signs of cardiovascular problems and no blood clots were found in his heart. Final findings of the State of Palestine autopsy. They're still using the term PA or Palestinian Authority. Final findings of the PA autopsy concluded that Jaradat was pummeled repeatedly on his chest and body. He sustained a total of 6 broken bones in his spine, arms, and legs. His lips were lacerated and his face was badly bruised. So, we have 2 renditions of what really happened to Mr. Jaradat. The previous article I was reading from was dismissive of the Palestinian claims of mistreatment against Mr. Jaradat. While, but this article from this website gives specifics about the condition of Mr. Jaradat and what led to this condition. So we have somewhat conflicting claims, but as I indicated, there are specifics in this one. Israeli sources claim that Jaradat died of a heart attack. Well, something must have brought about that heart attack, I would say. The Palestinians maintain he was tortured, since there were no signs of cardiovascular problems, which by themselves may have led to the heart attack, and no blood clots were found in his heart. I'm not a medical doctor, but I guess the lack of blood clots in his heart says something about why his heart attack was not, congenital, or was not spontaneous, let's say. And again, I'll read that last paragraph to you. Final findings of the Palestinian Authority autopsy concluded that Jaradat was pummeled repeatedly on his chest and body. He sustained a total of 6 broken bones in his arms, his legs, and his spine. His lips were lacerated and his face was badly bruised. Well, they're talking about an autopsy which apparently occurred under the PA. And the other article said something about Palestinian representatives who were present at the Israeli autopsy. I don't know if that means there are 2 separate autopsies, or if each side is claiming that their side was the venue for the autopsy. So, at any rate, 2 conflicting views on that, but the main thrust of this article is some 3 months after the fact, after Palestine's inclusion as a non-member state to the United Nations, they are going ahead, or are taking initial steps, to take the Israeli occupation to the ICC for crimes against Palestinians, and in particular citing the stated crime, the alleged crime of the abuse of Palestinian prisoner under the Israelis, Arafat Jaradat. Again, this is Middle East Monitor creating new perspectives, kind of formal blog here, or internet newsletter. Middle East Monitor, in short, memo. Okay. Well, now it's 4:15, quarter after 4 p.m. local time. And I'm trying to, I have to play around this computer's decision to go at its own pace here. Not respond. You know, once in a while, you get that little notice that Internet Explorer is not responding right now. Well, I kind of already know that. And I can't get to the other stuff if I can't move this page out of the way. Please send your donations, folks, to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. You probably should not send cash, checks, or money orders, or cashier's checks only, please. Well, bring that sucker down here. Let's see if we can... Okay... This would be an excellent time for people to call in. Someone might be messing with our computer link, trying to sabotage us. I kept having sabotage going through my head when those awful noises were being made behind me here through the ventilation shaft. Pretty scary. Here's something else we'll find on Facebook service. It's called the brutality of the brutality of Hebron's Israeli settlers. For a long, long time, if anything, we in the U.S. were hearing about how the settlers were under constant danger of attack and abuse by the Palestinian natives who live and have lived in some cases for many generations or many hundreds of years as a family. And this, of course, don't panic, folks, I'm still alive. This, of course, led to the justification of Israeli military protection of the settlers. They're both there illegally. They're both there contravening the Fourth Geneva Convention and regulations provided from the United Nations. There's not supposed to be a prolonged, pointless military occupation in land that was conquered in a military assault, attack, unprovoked attack, particularly when it leads to no good and only serves to oppress the local population of Palestinians. So the military occupation is illegal, and the establishment and expansion of Israeli Jewish settlements in those territories outside of Israel proper is illegal, unethical and immoral, unethically immoral, because it's purely exploitive. You don't, Fourth Geneva Convention specifically says, civilian population shall not be transferred to an established inside of territory which is occupied by the military. So, but of course, they're able to get away with this without impunity. Only the heckling and angry voices of the critics of the worst of Israel. Oh, gall darn it. See, I'm getting into this thing where I'm rambling because I need to buy some time here. Oh, okay. Tell you what I'll do. I'll try and refresh this page. This is Military Madness, brought to you every Monday on Free Radio Santa Cruz, heard around the world. Every Monday at 3 p.m. for a couple of hours. And come on, baby, let's try this one more time. I really want to get to this because there was a quote that I in particular. All right. Let's put this aside for the moment. If we can, if I could move it aside. And for the moment. Admittedly, we're probably not being deliberately sabotaged by anyone. This computer is overworked, and there definitely is an overloaded disk, which we're forcing to work very hard. Need to talk to the boss about that. Excuse me, need to talk to the collective about that. Rather beautiful day here in Santa Cruz. It's been a largely exceptionally cold winter here. Santa Cruz is, of course, a seaside community. Mount Liberal in the views of many. And I'm working up a sweat in here in the studio. Ventilation isn't that good to begin with, but I'm responsible for what comes over the airwaves. Oh, by the way, don't forget, you can get to the archive of our shows, Mideast Madness shows, by going to Radio for All. That's R-A-D-I-O, the number four, the digit four, all, A-L-L, radioforall.net. N-E-T. Look for, just enter the term Mideast Madness, two words, most likely. Mideast Madness, and you will see that the shows go back a good 7 or 8 months, the ones I was able to record. There has been some difficulty lately in getting some of my shows recorded. Last week's show apparently has gone forever into the ether. This one is being recorded. I can tell. I can see. And so that's where the archive for Mideast Madness is. Past shows are available at Radio for All. You can anyone can download those shows. Likewise, there are weekly announcements on IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz, or maybe it's in IndieBay Monterey. The point is, there is a full calendar of events for those who bother to put their event on IndieBay. And I'm also trying to leave the record of each show at IndieBay. So, well, here we are. Let's see if this one works. I think this one I don't even need to make a link to. Here attached. Okay, here's the this is a poster on Israeli apartheid. I'm not sure why this is put together, or if it was for a specific event or whatever. But as soon as it comes up, I'll read this poster. It's all quotations from important people on one side of the fence or the other. I think it's time for some music. It's 24 after 4. Let's have some beautiful Arabic music.
اسطوانات الشرق تقاسيم على العود للأستاذ جليل عزوز.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, my sincerest apologies. Since the music ended about 10 minutes ago, I neglected to pull up the volume level on my board, on my soundboard here, and you've been listening to intense darkness of lack of sound. Thousand apologies. I've been saying all kinds of neat things, trying to kill time here while the trying to get the computer up again. So there's this roughly 10-minute-long dead space. I can't begin to remember everything that I was saying. This is Mideast Madness, brought to you by Free Radio Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz County, California. Boy. Yeah, this is Israel Apartheid Week. And there's a film series to help celebrate that, or bring attention to it anyway. You may recall there were several short subjects in the foreign category that were up for Oscars a couple of weeks ago at the festivities. Short subjects, or not so short subjects, foreign films. Five Broken Cameras was one of the entries. It did not win the Oscar, but it will be shown at the Resource Center for Nonviolence at 7 p.m. Resource Center for Nonviolence is at 612 Ocean Street in the city of Santa Cruz. The first ever Palestinian film to be nominated for Best Documentary Feature by the AMPAS. The critically acclaimed Five Broken Cameras is a deeply personal, first-hand account of life and nonviolent resistance in Bilin, a West Bank village surrounded by Israeli settlements. Again, that will be showing March 6th, Wednesday night at 7 p.m., Five Broken Cameras. I have seen it. It is in its own right a zinger. As I was saying earlier, When I was talking to Robert, I was telling him about this film I saw there at the RCNV last night. We actually saw three films. One of them, an excellent 6.5-minute animation that was produced by Jewish Voice for Peace, entitled Israel and Palestine, A Very Short Introduction. There's been a lot of push and pull about that piece. It has offended many, many Jews who are, in my opinion, are suffering from severe denial about the truth. That was last night. You can see Israel and Palestine, A Very Short Introduction, on YouTube. Also, there was about a 20-minute long interview of Omar Barghouti by Amy Goodman, which was very revealing and often humorous. And thirdly, we saw portions of the film that I was talking to Robert about, specifically Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land. That's what it's called, PPP, Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land. That was last night. Tonight, there are two short films, Pressure Points, and apparently the second one is called The Bottom Line. Or maybe it's Have You Heard from Johannesburg and The Bottom Line. Two films centering on the boycott, divestiture, and sanctions movement against Israel. Tomorrow, Tuesday, March 5th, 7 p.m., they are presenting Roadmap to Apartheid. In this award-winning documentary, the first-time directors take a detailed look at the apartheid analogy commonly used to describe the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, narrated by Ms. Alice Walker, author of The Color Purple. This film series, as part of Israel Apartheid Week, is presented by the Palestine-Israel Action Committee of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, March 3rd through 6th. Every night, the festivities start at 7 o'clock. $5 to $10 donation, although no one is turned away for lack of funds. They do need, like everyone else, cash in order to continue their operations. But, of course, the important thing is getting the word out, educating the public. Therefore, no one turned away for lack of funds. 612 Ocean Street, Santa Cruz. Community discussion to follow each showing. Let's see how I want to do this. I'm really, really trying to get to this. Before the show is over, I want to get to this poster on Israel apartheid. The DocX thing isn't working. So, I'm trying to open it as zip, whatever the heck zip is. Until that's open, let me talk again, as I do just about, that there is a call to boycott the purchase of an item called SodaStream. It has many other names, depending mainly on where it's being sold. The important thing is that it is made in an industrial park in a very large Israeli settlement in the West Bank, one of those illegal settlements. They are putting out this machine that makes soda water. You put in tap water, and it successfully turns that water into bubbles, wet bubbles. Seltzer water. I don't mean to sound like an advertisement, because we're asking people to boycott this product. It is made in these illegal Israeli settlements. Products made in the Israeli West Bank settlements are illegally seized Palestinian land, water, and minerals. Palestinian resources. Exploitation of natural resources in occupied territories is not allowed by international law. You know, this is only one item that we're concentrating on, but it's one that is being sold at a small number of outlets locally here in this part of California. And I can tell you that Ahava is another line of beauty and health products, I believe, that are made outside of Israel, but many of the products have written on them made in Israel, which is a falsehood. So be aware that if you were even considering buying this, whether or not you want to support the state of Israel in your heart and through your pocketbook, they're not made in Israel. They're made on a Palestinian land, which is not controlled by the native Palestinians. The international boycott of firms that supported apartheid in South Africa helped overturn that racist regime. We can do it again. BoycottSodaStream.org. In the name of human rights, boycott SodaStream. How do we want to do this? This is very upsetting. I mean, this... there's a lot of things I can do on my home computer that I can't do on this one. And I don't know why. Okay, well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for bearing with me. You often hear me use that phrase, please bear with. Indulge me here. Well, I try to work around the technical problems that we have, technological difficulties of running the station and presenting Mideast Madness. It's time for me to say goodnight. My name is Ren, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's been a hectic, awful, almost two-hour period. I shall deal with these technicalities forthrightly by next Monday. Be assured, I shall indeed do that. And, oh my God, you're so slow. And thanks again for your attention and your donations. Bye-bye.
Will Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, March 4th, 2013. Israeli troops arrested 17 Palestinians during drone invasions, and political detainees held by Israel implement a one-day hunger strike. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. The Palestinian Minister for Detainees, Isa Karakeh, stated on Monday that the Palestinian detainees in the Jalbu'ah Israeli prison are holding a one-day hunger strike as an initial step, part of activities in support of hunger-striking detainees and to protest the ongoing Israeli violations. Karakeh said that 120 to 140 detainees in Jalbu'ah declared strike and returned their meals as part of further steps. That also comes in retaliation to the death of detainee Arafat Jaradat, who was tortured to death. Jaradat, 33, from Sa'ir town near Hebron City, was kidnapped by the army on February 18 and was subjected to extreme torture that led to his death in the Israeli interrogation facility on Saturday, February 23, 2013. Furthermore, Karakeh said that on Sunday at night, the army broke into Section 11 of the Negev detention camp and attacked several detainees. In other news, 17 Palestinians were arrested on Monday by Israeli troops during morning and dawn invasions targeting a number of West Bank communities. Palestinian sources said that Israeli troops invaded southern West Bank city of Hebron and the nearby Al-Arub town, searched homes, then arrested 11 men and took them to unknown location. Also in southern West Bank, Israeli troops stormed the city of Bethlehem and arrested a young man after searching his home. Meanwhile, in the northern West Bank city of Jenin, Israeli soldiers searched homes and arrested two men. Another four men were taken by the Israeli soldiers during an invasion targeting the nearby Qalqilya city. Later on Monday, clashes erupted between local youth and Israeli soldiers at the southern entrance of Jenin city. Local sources said that Israeli soldiers used tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets against the unarmed Palestinian youth. No injuries or arrests were reported. Over the weekend, a group of fundamentalist Israeli settlers assaulted on Sunday three Palestinian schoolchildren in Jaba' village, north of occupied East Jerusalem. The three are brothers. This is the second attack against them since Thursday. Mahmoud Abu Ghayya, a resident of Al-Jahaleen Bedouin village, stated that the settlers attacked three schoolchildren while walking to school, inflicting various injuries. The army arrived at the scene and prevented Yahya Habayib, a local reporter working for Ajyar Radio, from documenting the attack and confiscated his camera. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, March 4th news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, Ghassan Bamnoura.